Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
Brexit means Brexit.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the Atlantic from the perspective of the other. I'm Royfield Brown, who's in a wet, grey Birmingham, back home with my parents. And today I'm joined by Gabe Fleischer. Gabe, where exactly are you today, sir?
I'm in St. Louis, Missouri.
The middle of America, which I suppose goes to the heart of actually what you do, which is you run this influential newsletter, which is nonpartisan. So if you're in the middle of the country, you're balanced, aren't you?
I don't know that being in the middle of the country necessarily gives you any political balance, because there's certainly partisans right here in Missouri, just like there are on either coast. But I do think by virtue of my living in St. Louis and not living, you know, kind of in Washington, D.C. or New York or L.A., where a lot of journalists are located, I do think I come at journalism with a bit of a different perspective than a lot of other journalists. I do try to be nonpartisan. I don't know that necessarily being in the Midwest makes you nonpartisan by any measure, but I do think it gives me a different perspective than other journalists.
I said that somewhat tongue-in-cheek when I said that you were balanced. But how hard is it for you to be nonpartisan in these times which are incredibly rife with partisanship?
I first really got interested in politics during the 2008 elections. I was about 6 or 7 years old and just got really fascinated by the campaign and by presidential history in general, and then kind of slowly, you know, became more and more passionate about American politics. And pretty quickly that turned into writing about American politics and kind of the newsletter that I run today. And so I guess pretty much all of my political involvement has been, for the most part, through the lens of covering politics and trying to do it, like you said, in kind of a balanced way. I think for me, a lot of people do ask a lot, thinking it must be so difficult to stay nonpartisan, but the honest truth is that that's kind of been my whole focus ever since I really started following politics, was just trying to look at it from all perspectives and try to report the news as straightforwardly as I could, as down the middle as I could. I think it is something that's challenging for a lot of people, but for me personally, it's just kind of how I've always looked at politics, just more in the terms of how I can cover it for my readers, how I can explain it to them and make the most sense possible while not taking, you know, a side either way.
Some would say that it's incredibly brave to try and be non-partisan now, because with the rise of podcasts and, of course, before that, cable TV, niche interests, niche groups, it's niche, not niche, because I am English, and our various societal and political peccadilloes can just be exaggerated because we don't have to go out of our political silos. Where does your news end and punditry start? And do you feel that maybe if you did produce a right-wing or a left-wing newsletter, you might have more listeners and more fire?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I mean, I think to take kind of the second part first, I do think there's an element to which in our political ecosystem. I mean, I think especially, I guess, you know, obviously I'm 18 and so I'm a young person. And I do think the kind of standard model, and not that this is right or wrong, of young people kind of getting involved in politics is by becoming activists for either side. And you see people on the left and the right, you know, young people having very large platforms, you know, campaigning for candidates or for different issues. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I think you're right that it clearly is a model, you know, certainly in the media and certainly for young people, you know, getting involved in politics in the media, it's certainly a model for people to attract a large platform. So I suppose it's possible that if I had decided to do that, I'd have a larger platform. But to me, I don't think that's as useful. Like, I think we have enough people that are telling people their opinions and telling people how to think and what to think. And that's just not what I try to do. And I have been able to grow a pretty, you know, sizable audience or I'm proud of the audience we're able to grow. And I think part of that is because I'm nonpartisan. And so maybe it would be bigger if I was partisan, but I do think there are people that are looking for not people telling them what to think or how to think, just looking for the facts and looking to kind of understand what's going on just from a purely unbiased perspective or nonpartisan perspective of just trying to sort through the news every day. So, I think there's obviously a lot of people that get sucked into their, you know, their kind of silos, like you say, but I do think there's a lot of other people that are actually looking for kind of unbiased news and looking for news that isn't trying to tell them what to think and is just giving them the facts. So,
Gabe, I knew you were young, right? And you're making me feel even older than I feel at the moment, right? But you are very young, aren't you? Just before we actually hit record, you let out the fact that you're 18 and you've been running your newsletter for how long?
I've been running it since 2011. I was about 9 years old when it started.
Wow. All right. So how frustrating was it for the 9-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old Gabe that you couldn't actually go and vote?
It's frustrating, I think it's fair to say. I mean, it's certainly, I think there's no doubt voting is a huge part of our political process. And so it was annoying when I was younger that I was able to participate in that way. But I like to think that I found my own ways that I was able to kind of play a role in the political process and the civic process. So even without voting, I still found there are ways to get involved.
I'm guessing that you haven't actually ever voted.
I have voted now since I've turned 18 in like local elections that have been held in the past few months.
And of course, we can't ask you which way you voted.
I will not answer.
All right. You've got 30,000 subscribers to your newsletter, which is called Wake Up to Politics. As a 9-year-old, what did a 9-year-old have to say in that very first newsletter?
The very first newsletter was actually to my mom, was my first subscriber, my first and only subscriber at that time. Now I have about 50,000, and so it's definitely grown.
Well, listen, I'm sorry for misreporting.
That is okay.
I feel like I'm, you know, underreporting corona deaths or something or other. It's 50,000, not 30,000.
That's okay. It was basically a similar format to what I do today. It was sent every weekday morning. I was just trying to cover pretty much what happened yesterday and what's going to happen today in American politics, focusing on the White House, on Congress, and courts. Then I believe the very first newsletter he asked about the first day, I believe it was the day Mitt Romney launched his exploratory committee to run for president in 2012. But in terms of what I was covering, pretty much the same stuff.
So Gabe, right, what were 9-year-old boys doing in 2011? What were they playing with? What computer games were they playing with?
I never played many computer games. Maybe
that's what I was going to say. Don't you feel that you've missed out on childhood?
Right. I do not. I don't feel that way at all. I have a lot of friends and I play games and I'm a normal kid in a lot of respects. I do this on the side, but
what you do is editorialize yesterday's political news, as you just said. So which is actually more important? Was it the second night of the DNC conference? Was it the Senate Intelligence Committee's bipartisan report on ties between the Trump campaign and Russia at the start of the 2016 election? Or was it the Postmaster General announcing that he's going to halt all changes to the Postal Service in the 2020 election? Which one of those is the most significant, would you say?
I mean, I guess I'll say, this is a cop-out, I'll say I covered all three in this morning's newsletter, so I don't think like one has to be any more important than the other. I covered all three of them because they're all three important stories and important developments.
But you ran them in a particular order. Was that order because you knew that's what your consumers are going to want. So you started with the Democratic National Convention, or was it the fact that you're thinking of posterity, or was it true newsworthiness?
I think much more the latter. I mean, I don't really spend that much time thinking about what my readers are going to click on or want to read. I don't really think that should factor into those decisions. I think the posterity point you bring up, for me, like every 4 years when we have the conventions, I think just necessarily, I cover American politics very specifically, and I just think necessarily something like a political convention rises to the top of being like the most newsworthy, I don't want to say most newsworthy, but it's certainly, it's just always going to be kind of the lead story. It's the conventions, they only happen every 4 years. They're a big part of framing the election cycles. I anticipate, you know, every day of the convention, generally I'll start out with, you know, just a summary of what happened the night before. It's not going to be the only thing in that day's newsletter, but I do think, you know, the Democrats nominating their presidential candidate for the November cycle is historical note for posterity that I think merits it coming at the top. But those other stories they mentioned are also very important to the kind of immediacy of what's going on right now.
Written throughout the DNA of your newsletter is the fact that it's nonpartisan. So I'm guessing that how you basically determine your stories is by looking at kind of trusted news sources. Again, in these partisan times, how hard is that? Or do you say, well, I know this source is right, this source is, let's say, Democratic, I know they're maybe going to twist the story slightly this way or that way, and then you kind of gaybize it. You know, how exactly do you look at your primary sources? And then also, do you have kind of insiders who you basically go for, or maybe give you tidbits of information?
Yeah, it's both. You know, the newsletter, it's a lot of it is kind of summarizing other outlets' reporting and kind of giving people kind of a one-stop shop for kind of the most important things they need to know from other outlets. I also, you know, do report my own original reporting whenever, you know, I'm able to, whenever I'm able to report out, you know, stories that I've reported myself from my own sources. And so it's a mix of those. When I'm kind of summarizing what other outlets are reporting, I'm looking at the news sides of those operations. So I do think you won't see anything about any op-eds or any opinion pieces for the most part. And so it's mostly just, you know, taking each outlet for what they are. Most of the kind of outlets that make up the mainstream media, so to speak, any outlet that has a serious news gathering operation, even if it also has a serious opinion side, whether that be the New York Times or Fox News, you know, if they're journalists that I know and trust and they're reporting new information, then I'll cite them in the newsletter and point my readers there if they're the outlet kind of reporting that important information for the day.
So you started in 2011 as a veteran political reporter at the age of 9, right? Mm-hmm. And here you are now, age 18 with 50,000 subscribers. You know, you mentioned in the New York Times as you know, a great way to start your political day. In what ways have you noticed American politics has actually changed in your reporting of it in that time? Very obviously, we've had two elections. Mm-hmm. We're actually on the third election cycle, presidential. But give us a sense of how you can see the American political landscape change in that time.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think at least from the very limited perspective, I think there's larger trends and ways to answer that question. I'll start by just saying, like, from the purview of someone writing a morning newsletter, there's just a lot more going on. And so there's just a lot more each day to report on and sift through. I mean, like you just said it, like you just listed off three major stories that probably, you know, back in 2011, you know, any one of them would have been, no question, the top story for the day. But now here in 2020, we have three of those. And so I just think it's the explosion of things going on, the speed of the news cycle. And I think that's part of what people look to my newsletter for. That's, I think, why it's been able to grow so much, is people just need help sorting through. Back in 2011, when I started the newsletter, there would be days I'd wake up and it would be hard to, like, find things to write about. I think the politicians of that era were made news less often, were less interested in being headlines as often. And so now it's unimaginable to think of, like, needing to look for the news. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's right there in front of us. So I think from the perspective of, like, writing a newsletter.
Okay. You were seriously telling me that you were struggling for news back in 2011.
There were days then I'd wake up and there wasn't as much to write about. And, you know, a big part of my newsletter has always been kind of just giving the schedules of the president, of Congress, what's just happening in Washington that day. And so that's always been the newsletter. But there were definitely times that there just weren't many other headlines beyond that. But when it was Romney versus Obama, just two people less interested in making big headlines, making big splashes.
Gabe, are you basically saying that when you have two political figures who respectfully disagree and who are quite competent at what they do, there's less things to write about?
I'm not going so far as to say that. I'm saying different politicians
have
different...
That's definitely my inference, sir. I might not necessarily...
I didn't make any judgment on confidence or on anything like that. I just think there's different politicians with different media strategies. And right now we're seeing a lot of politicians on the left and the right who are very good at making news and using Twitter and using social media and using Instagram Lives, you know, just link it, you know, bring news to their followers and generate coverage. And so that's not a judgment on competence, because that takes a level of competence to make.
How much is President Trump a newsmaker as opposed to somebody who's actually governing and presiding?
I think he is someone who's very focused on both. I don't think one has to be the answer. I think Donald Trump, more than any president we've seen since maybe, you know, Lyndon Johnson or Richard Nixon, is very clearly and openly focused on how he's covered in the media. And we know from reporting that he wakes up in the morning and he very much wants to be the Chiron on his TV. He wants to be on the front page of the New York Times. And he makes sure that he's, whether he's tweeting or making a speech or writing a law, that he makes sure he's going to generate coverage. There's no question he's very focused on
that. And how much of that is him bullying the media? It's not by accident that he keeps on saying fake news, the press is the enemy of the people. He wants to try and control the media narrative, whether it is to push forward his agenda or to deflect. One of the incredible things about Donald Trump is he is very good on social media, but it's every day, it's relentless. He's got something to say, and it acts as a way of deflecting. So for me, it's somewhat kind of disingenuous that he's always saying that the media is the enemy of the people.
I would say Donald Trump, it's an interesting balance, because you're right. At one hand, he rails against the media constantly, and he calls them the enemy of the people, and us fake news, and he twists how reporters are reporting about him. But at the same time, he's very solicitous of the media, and he needs the media, and he recognizes that, and he wants positive media coverage. He takes questions more than his recent predecessors. He's having a press conference today. He does most days. So the issue isn't accessibility. It's oftentimes, you know, the truth of what he's saying, or like you say, the volume, whether he's saying so much that he's trying to kind of flood the zone. It can be difficult to sort through those statements and make sure that you're fact-checking them. But there is an inherent contradiction there to calling reporters fake news and then also doing so many interviews with them. And so I think it just goes to show how, even as he's risen to prominence by bashing the media, he also recognizes he's only done it by really trying hard to control, like you say, media narratives and to kind of court them.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think it was disgraceful that the intelligence agencies allowed any information that turned out to be so false and fake out. I think it's a disgrace. And I say that. And that's something that Nazi Germany would have done and did do. I think it's a disgrace that information that was false and fake and never happened got released to the public. As far as BuzzFeed, which is a failing pile of garbage, writing it, I think they're going to suffer the consequences. They already are. And as far as CNN going out of their way to build it up. And by the way, we just found out I was coming down. Michael Cohen is a very talented lawyer. He's a good lawyer in my firm. It was just reported that it wasn't this Michael Cohen they were talking about. So all night long, it's Michael Cohen. I said, I want to see your passport. He brings his passport to my office. I say, hey, wait a minute. He didn't leave the country. He wasn't out of the country. They had Michael Cohen of the Trump Organization was in Prague. It turned out to be a different Michael Cohen. It's a disgrace what took place. It's a disgrace. And I think they ought to apologize to start with Michael Cohen. Go ahead. No, not you. Not you. Your organization's terrible. Let's go. Go ahead. Quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude. No, I'm not going to give you a question. You are fake news. Go ahead.
If Donald Trump is forever saying fake news, and I think anyone has to agree, whether you are Republican or Democrat or independent, that the rhetoric of Donald Trump is very different from any other recent American politician. Arguably, you could say that since Andrew Jackson, we've never had a politician who's used words that, at least in their time, has been so bellicose and divisive. I can safely say that without a Republican saying, no, he's eloquent as Obama or as amiable as Bush. You know, Donald Trump is just different. Okay. How balanced can media be when you mentioned the word lies? Again, without wanting to be too partisan, but that is our job here. We are partisan. But I think objectively, Donald Trump and the Washington Post has actually counted them, and I forget how many. It's 20,000, 30,000. It's a lot since he's become president. Mm-hmm. He has misled, lied on thousands of occasions. How important is it that non-partisan media like yourself call out those lies or those misleading statements for what they are?
It's critically important. I think a huge part of a journalist's job always, but especially now, is to fact check and to ensure that any politician, whenever they're speaking, you know, especially someone like the President of the United States, if they're speaking to the American people, they're delivering true information. And if they're not, being open with your readers or viewers or listeners and being very aggressive about pointing out when their statements aren't truthful. So I think it's a critical part of the journalist's job.
Surely then, when you say this is untrue, then you have the other side of the political spectrum saying that you are shills for the other side and you're in a little bit of a no-win situation. Can somebody speak truth to Donald Trump and then still have access?
You know, I get feedback from my readers every day, and I love getting feedback from my readers and hearing whenever they think, whether they're from the left or the right, think that I missed the mark. So you're never going to please anyone. To be nonpartisan isn't to say that you're being completely unbiased, because we all have biases and none of us are robots, without our own experiences and perspectives. So you can't lie and say that isn't there. But I think the key is to try to be objective always. And so if Donald Trump says something that isn't true, you know, that isn't objectively true, then you have to state that, just as I would if Joe Biden did, or Bernie Sanders, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or any other politician. You just have to be fair, and you have to hold power to account no matter what their party label is. And if there's people that have trouble with you doing that, you know, in any cases, yeah, I mean, they are welcome to, you know, unsubscribe or whatever it may be, but that's what I try to do every day.
When Donald Trump calls into Fox News in the morning, do you think they're doing a true journalistic job? They hold in power to account?
I think, like, I will say personally, just in terms of how I consume the news, I do not watch much cable TV because I don't find that it's often the most useful thing in terms of...
But Gabe, that wasn't the question. The question was, I don't watch Fox News, but I've seen the clips when Donald Trump has rung into Fox News. They're not journalists then, are they, by your definition?
I'm not trying to define journalists. I want to be clear about that. There's opinion journalists are out there. What I was going to say is that it is that on Fox News or MSNBC or many cable networks, I think there's an emphasis on opinion journalists, and whether or not they're open about that label, that's what they are. And so, yes, they're interviewing him from their bias, and they're not trying to hide their political persuasion. And so if it's on Fox News, they're giving him oftentimes softball questions and no, not fully holding power to account, because I don't think that makes them not journalists, but they're opinion journalists. And some of Fox News's hosts are more open than that. Like Sean Hannity would tell you that openly, that he's an opinion journalist. And therefore, if his opinions match up closely with Donald Trump, then no, it's not a very aggressive interview or one that's going to really test him or hold his feet to the fire, because, you know, just his, you know, political persuasion is so clearly matched up, and his advocacy is oftentimes is lined up with Donald Trump.
So the White House press office, they call you up as soon as you put down the phone to me, right? You know, so basically it's the end of our interview. You've been grilled by Royfield Brown of Mid-Atlantic, right? And you're there like fanning yourself afterwards saying, bloody hell, you know, that was a hard-hitting interview. And the White House press office then call you up and you go, oh, thank goodness, this is easy, right? And they say, okay, you've got half an hour with Donald Trump. What are your first three questions?
That's a good question. I think right now, just in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, I think it would be hard for me to ask about anything other than that. So I think for me, because I'm a student, one of my questions would be about schools reopening. Now, he's been pretty you know, heavily advocating for schools to reopen, but in the past few days, we've seen colleges have to kind of roll back their plans because of the surge of cases on college campuses. So I think that would certainly be one of my main questions, is whether he, you know, has seen those kinds of hotspots emerge at college campuses and still feels like it's safe to send children back to school. You know, staying on that topic, you know, asking about, you know, his delay, or, you know, the fact that he's still yet to come up with any sort of national kind of testing or contact tracing plan. I think that would be an important topic. I would want to kind of hit on what is his plan for the pandemic? What is he doing to try to, you know, bend the curve of the coronavirus? I think that would be a main question. And then I think also because I guess I would anticipate, you know, a lot of his response to be, as he has in the past, dismissing the virus, I think to ask kind of along the lines of what we've been talking about his misinformation about the virus, because he has spread, you know, incorrect statistics or incorrect ideas about the virus. We just saw, you know, in the past few days, there's been reporting he's pushing an unproven drug to help the coronavirus. So to ask him about the impact that he thinks that has had, whether he feels like he's been honest with the American people throughout the pandemic, whether he feels like what the impact of a president is, you know, not always being upfront with the president of the pandemic, whether he thinks that is part of why it's gone on this long and continues to impact the country. So I think that would probably turn into more than three questions, but those are probably topics that.
All right. I think it's interesting that you are going to go so hard in on coronavirus when we have the Senate Intelligence Committee's report on Russian links between the Trump campaign, in the 2016 elections, and the fact that, you know, he said this is fake news and for the last 4 years, and this is a bipartisan committee. There are Republicans who have actually said no, there were these links, and there was a key Russian spy in effect embedded in the Trump campaign, and they had, you know, extensive kind of links with him. And surely, if we're just going to look at, you know, his response to coronavirus, you know, he's interviewed Chris Wallace, he's going to wave around some graphs, and then when you say oh no, he's going to get one of his aides to go and get another graph and tell you that you're looking at the figures in another way. By the way, I'm not saying that your questions weren't good, by the way. No, I just realised how that's going to
If I were given a chance to interview President Trump, and I hope I will be able to soon, I'd have many more than two questions. The points you raise are equally important questions, and I'd have a lot to ask. It would be very difficult to trim it down to three if that's what I have to do. Those are the things on my mind, though, and I think particularly as a student, there are questions about school reopening, like I said, that I don't feel like he's been asked really yet. From that perspective of a student, I think it'd be important.
It has to be said. It has to be said, when I saw your fresh-faced picture, you got a touch of the Justin Trudeau's about you in that picture, you know, and he's a good-looking guy. So I don't know what that says, right? But I did say to myself, how old is this guy? And then when you told me, I nearly fell off my podcasting chair. But anyway, where does your newsletter go next? Where can it go next? Because you've got high school to finish, haven't you? Or you got college to go to. Surely you've got girls to date or boys to date. I don't want to be heteronormative, or maybe you're even asexual. I don't know. It's not for you to say in this podcast, but I'm sure you've got a certain amount of growing up to do, and you've got a public that really wants more non-partisan political news. So where does the newsletter go?
Sure. Yeah. So I just graduated high school a few months ago, and so I'll be studying college. Thank you. At Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. So I'm excited about that. So soon, Georgetown isn't welcoming students back to campus for the first semester, but I'm still hoping to make my way soon to Washington. And my hope is to really, like we talked about earlier, kind of grow the original reporting side of my newsletter, incorporate more interviews. Maybe the president will be one of them, but incorporate more interviews and original reporting into my newsletter and just grow it as much as I can. I also have a podcast as well with St. Louis Public Radio that I'll be continuing to do from DC. So just my hope to continue working on those and grow them as much as I can.
Gabe, so we started off with you saying that you're not part of the elites, you're in the middle of America, you're unsullied by the coastal biases, and now you told me you're going off to Washington.
I am indeed. I am. I think I am very proud of the perspective I bring by journalism as being someone from the Midwest, and I love it here in St. Louis, but I really am very excited to have the opportunity to be able to live in DC and interview some of the major players and be kind of right in the action. I hope that I don't lose, the part of me that is from Missouri and that is removed from being part of DC. But I also think, in terms of bringing value to my readers, I think there'll be a lot for me to do and cover in DC. So I'm excited.
So you're going to the seat of power to tell truth to power.
That's the goal. That's my hope.
Boom. Gabe Fleischer, thank you for coming on to Mid-Atlantic and having a good old natter with us, as we say in England. Just remind everybody where they can catch up with your newsletter, sir, and your good works.
Sure. You can find the newsletter at wakeuptopolitics.com.
Super simple. And the last time we reported on it, there were 50,000 daily subscribers. That's obviously gone up by, 3,000?
Sorry, the newsletter subscribers?
Yeah.
It's about 50,000, yeah.
And oh, well, it was at the start. I said 30,000.
Oh. That's true.
Well, yeah, this is my weak attempt at humor. But Gabe, thank you for coming on to Mid-Atlantic.
Thanks so much for having me.
By the way, put bottom of the newsletter, little link. I did this interview with this incredibly intelligent, warm, good-looking English guy, and you can check out my interview with him here. So don't forget to put that
at
the bottom. You don't have to, don't lead in with it. Don't lead in on the newsletter. Do the DNC, Democratic National Congress.
That'll go at the top.
Second story, hard-hitting political interview with Royfield Brown of Mid-Atlantic. Just underneath. Thank you for listening, folks. This has been Mid-Atlantic. I've been talking to our new best friend, Gabe Fleischer. His newsletter is wonderful. I've been subscribing to it and reading it for the last, 3-4 weeks now. And I suggest that you do. So it's wakeuptopolitics.com.
That's right.
Wakeuptopolitics.com. Go there, become a subscriber. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, Republican, British, Canadian, or American. It's blooming good, and it'll give you a real good, concise set of information on not only what has happened yesterday, but the things which are probably going to happen today. So go and do that, wakeuptopolitics.com. Don't forget, you can go on to midatlanticshow.com. You can leave us a voice note by hitting the speak pipe button over there on the right. That means you've got a right of reply. You can talk for up to 2 minutes, and we can include that on a future show. I hope you're enjoying these interviews that we're doing, specifically on the run-up to the American election. The normal pundit team are still here. I know you're probably thinking, where's Emma? Yeah, where's Doug? Where's Laura? They are still here, being as we live in contentious, interesting, thought-provoking, continuously media-generating times. We're upping our output here, and part of that upping of the output is to speak to interesting people like Gabe. That's been me, Royfield Brown at Mid-Atlantic. You can send me an email where I'm quite simply royfield@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter where I'm at Royfield, but I'm rubbish on that. I say that every time. Take care, look after yourselves, and don't forget, left or centre politics is right politics. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.